to focus, just to persevere and just to make it. But everything that's within your grasp, you gotta take it. You gotta go hard and just dig deep inside you to find that method, that mode that wants that hunger to survive. Just to ride the grind and take it the way you gotta take it and never stop.
I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. Can't no one stop me, yeah, bring it in. I came to win, yeah, I came to win.
What's going on, everybody? Once again, this is Kyle Hunter. I'd like to welcome y'all back to the Diagnosis Success Podcast, where we talk about motivation, inspiration, dedication, and as always, just tapping into your higher self and just reaching those heights of greatness and success. And this is super dope, man. I just want to shout all y'all out because the numbers are through the roof. We got a lot of listeners and just a lot of great guests that we have on this show to actually talk about what they do, how they do it, and how you can get involved as well to try to reach that level of greatness. So today I actually have some of my great friends on here with me, and y'all probably are familiar with them. We put out about 2 EPs together. I got another EP coming out with my brother Kurt. More music coming out with Silk Beats. So no other than Silk Beats on the podcast. What's up, fellas?
Thank you for having us.
What's going on, bro? How you doing, man?
Great, man. Everything's healthy, man. Everything's good, man. So, you know, a lot of times, man, like, you know, people are familiar with the people I work with, but a lot of times they might not necessarily be familiar with the background and the story of how you guys actually came to be. So if anything, for the listeners that might not necessarily be familiar with what you guys do, I know they're familiar with the music we've done, but just how did you guys collectively come together, I say, and also like in terms of like your musical journey to create the name Silk Beats, like how did that come about as well? If y'all could just break that down.
Totally. So Kurt's friends with Gabe, like from home. They've been friends forever. Me and Gabe went to college together. We started a group chat in like our sophomore year where we would just like send each other music, and we were all kind of getting into producing at the same time, and we would send each other like beats and give advice, kind of trade inspiration. And then COVID happened and we were kind of just like, why don't we start making music together? And we hadn't really done it in the past. And since we already had this relationship in this group chat specifically, we just kind of went from there and started like sending loops back and forth, and one person would add drums, bass, whatever. And then we just ended up like churning out a bunch of beats and then became Silk Beats, which stands for I'm Sam Irving, Gabe Lehman, L, Kurt, K, S-I-L-K. A lot of people don't know the story behind the acronym, so gotta fill them in.
That's dope. That's dope.
Yeah. And also just for context, we're located in Brooklyn right now. The three of us live, our apartments are in Bed-Stuy, and then we got this studio that we're in right now in Williamsburg, where we are running sessions and stuff. So that's been a big transition, like a level up for Silk recently, has been that we got this space. So we have, you know, a place to cook up and to record artists, etc. So, yeah.
Super dope, man. That's fire, man. That's fire. Gabe, what's up, man? You got any...
Yo, what's up, Kyle?
What's up, brother?
Not really. I learned that the acronym Silk was made for those things maybe like a couple weeks ago. So that's news to me. I just thought it was like we made silky beats, you know? So that was all new.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up.
Yeah.
That's super dope, man. Super dope. So, you know, like talking to producers and stuff like that, a lot of times, one thing that I often discuss with them is who were their musical influences. Like for me being a rap artist, growing up for me, especially growing up in like Queens, we had like LL Cool J, we had Cool G Rap, we had Run DMC, Lost Boys, Queens rappers, Nas, all of these different types of just talents just bubbling up from different regions of Queens. And then later on, of course, we had 50 and G-Unit, and they had their run. So there's always a component of something that sparks that flame. So I'm interested in knowing, like, from every one of you guys, like, musically, what were your influences growing up? How did you get acquainted with music? And just how did that love start to just blossom into what you guys are doing right now?
That's a good question. I will say I realized recently that this was the case, but I think the movie School of Rock, have you ever seen that movie with Jack Black?
I've never seen it.
So. Okay. Yeah, it's such a good movie. It's a hilarious movie, and it came out when I was like probably 8 or something, and I was already playing the drums, and I think then they play like a Led Zeppelin song in that movie, and I was just like, this song is amazing. I need to actually listen to it. And then that got me like listening to music independently, I think, as opposed to just kind of like listening to whatever my parents had on. So I would say like probably most influenced. I was played in like indie bands, like rock bands in high school, bands like Radiohead, Wilco, that type of stuff, hugely influential for me. I also played a lot of jazz too. So like Wes Montgomery and Grant Green and Charles Mingus and people like that.
That's what I was going to ask you. Who's like your favorite jazz artist?
Yeah, I would say it's probably Mingus. I mean, I love all, and maybe Thelonious Monk too. I would say those are probably my two biggest. It's weird because that stuff doesn't have as much of a direct influence as like the rap that I listen to now, or like, you know, the R&B that I listen to, or pop that I listen to. But I feel like it's still kind of a big part of my musical identity because it was so crucial to like what I was listening to when I was growing up.
That's right, man. And you know what? To segue off of what you said, it's dope to have those types of influences, because I feel like growing up for me, like my dad was a jazz musician. Yes. So we listened to jazz in the house, but my mom, she was into church music. So I listened to a lot of gospel, a lot of Mahalia Jackson, Shirley Caesar, all those old school church records. But then like I got into hip hop. So I kind of had like a nice melting pot. And I think that's dope because it makes you very diverse. Like your music doesn't have to follow one path. Like you can really experiment with different styles, different vibes, and just kind of embrace all that stuff. So that's dope. That's dope.
Yeah, I agree. It gives you some more kind of like freedom ultimately, I think. I'll hand the mic over to the other guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think what is very cool about the three of us is that we all have very different things that we like to do and different tastes. And at the same time, everything crosses over. So we all really find ourselves loving the same kind of music and appreciating that. And the same thing that we do in the group, like we all have kind of things that we specialize in. So like, I feel like on my end, it was like really like the R&B stuff. So that's why I'm so excited. Like it was Motown, and that's why I started playing bass, and like, you know, hearing the stuff that you've been doing with the Temptations, like it's all just incredible. It gets me so excited because that was what I grew up on, was old R&B and soul. And my dad is a huge reggae fan, so I was always listening to like old Bob Marley and the Wailers records. Like he has those on vinyl. And then also just like P-Funk, like George Clinton, and that moved everything. So then I really started getting into like everything from like the late 70s into like Dr. Dre and like the stuff like in the early 90s, and then also like the G-Unit stuff, like that was kind of my stuff. And then they got me into the more like modern trap music and like hip-hop that we make ultimately. So I kind of have those, like I'm like an old soul in that way. So like that's kind of how I kind of fit in that with them.
That's top. Gabe, quick question for you. Who are your favorite R&B artists?
Trying to think. I mean, like Teddy Pendergrass, Luther Vandross. Yeah. I mean, that's like my favorite era. Yeah. That's it. I mean, like 1981 is like, that's my year, you know, like, and or like 82, like Thriller, like everything that Michael Jackson did, like everything Quincy Jones has done. Like I love like the 80s Aretha funk, like the stuff that she did, like Jump to It, you know, stuff then. So like I got really into that kind of era. I just also love like Prince around that time, like early Prince. So that's like, that's kind of my funk favorite stuff. And then getting into like, you know, like NWA in the late 80s, and then moving on into the 90s. So that's my stuff. Absolutely. Yeah.
Dope. Fire, man. Fire.
Teddy P. I thought you were going to say like Stevie Wonder.
Oh, right. Of course, Stevie. I was trying to find some names that are.
The legend, the god, Stevie.
Yeah, of course.
The god. Yeah. So you, Kurt, what were your like influences and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I would say like when I was growing up, I had some friends who were like, their families were super big into music. And my family was definitely into music. Like my parents definitely listened to fun stuff, you know, but it was a different approach because neither my mom nor my dad really like were creatives in the musical sense. Like they didn't, you know, they weren't into recording or like writing music very much. So most of my like music listening experience with them was like just like them having fun, you know. Like they would put on music when they were like having a party, when we were in the car, like on a road trip. Like that was like, so a lot of the music that I like consumed was stuff that my parents were listening to because they just like really enjoyed it. You know, it was like a good vibe. It was a good mood thing. It was something that would, you know, we weren't listening to like sad stuff, you know. It was like good upbeat stuff, like, I don't know, things that enhance your experience in like a positive way. And so that was pretty like influential in how I ended up like viewing music, because it was just like, oh, like music is a thing that makes my life better. You know, it didn't start out as like a way of me expressing myself or like, or anything like that. It was more so just like, oh, this is a good vibe. Like music makes me smile kind of thing. So that was how it started out. And it was, you know, across a bunch of genres, definitely like some rock. It was primarily for a while what my parents listened to, which was like, yeah, rock. And then some kind of like electronic stuff, like down tempo things a little bit. It wasn't until like, I would say like I didn't really get into hip hop too much until like late high school. I was on SoundCloud listening to like just other kids, like, you know, people who were younger than me, people who were older or whatever, and just like I like kind of discovered the beat scene there, and I was like just super into it then, and I could envision myself like making beats like that. So I started trying to do it, you know. And when I was a kid, I used to get lost in GarageBand and shit, like just kind of part of my language. I used to like mess around just in the DAW, and I started doing that again, and then kind of couldn't stop. Yeah. So like genre wise, I don't know. It was pretty all over the place for hip hop. Like the formative stuff for me was like J. Cole's Born Sinner and 2014 Forest Hills. Like those were the first two rap albums that I got into that I like couldn't stop listening to. And from there it was like, you know, J. Cole has a really interesting production too. Like, you know, the albums from then were like so distinctly 2000s sounding, you know. So it was, yeah, coming from that was definitely interesting.
Dope. Yeah, that's fine. It's interesting to see how individually you guys had different types of influences, but collectively how it comes together so well. So if you take a little bit of jazz, you take some soul, R&B, some reggae, then you just take like some Cole and all these things and these elements, and you kind of just cook them up. And it's dope because I could really hear that within the music that you guys make. So it's definitely there. If I had to ask you guys another question, it would be as far as the creative process in terms of producing, how do you guys craft the music? So meaning that, because I know you all do individual things, play different instruments and stuff like that. So what does it all start with for you guys? Like, is it a, I guess the question I'm trying to ask more specifically, is it a process that you guys have down pat where, you know, someone will lay the drums first, then from the drums you'll get the bass? Or is it like, how do you guys do a framework? Is it just jam sessions where these things come about, or do you kind of have a framework in mind going into it? Hey, today we're gonna make some chill hop, or later on we're gonna make some trap. Like, how's the process for Silk Beats?
For sure, I think it's definitely always changing just because we all are into similar things and it all crosses over. But generally, I think Kurt's great at getting stuff started. So he'll usually send over some keys or a sample or just an idea that kind of sounds like just something he was doing for maybe it was like a half hour or something. He just got something started for us. And then typically I'll add bass and then some live instrumentation, whether it's some guitar, add a couple other things. Sam is incredible with electronic production, so whether he's adding some textures up top, whether that's synth or percussion, and then drums, and then he arranges it typically and then mixes it. So that's kind of our general framework. But it's cool because we were doing everything remote for about a year, and now things are changed and we're in the same place and are doing things together. So all of that's kind of, it's all being shaken up, which I think is good, because you can get into a place where you're finding yourself in that kind of comfort zone where you know what you're going to make, and you've kind of found that formula almost, which I think can be great to an extent, but then can hinder creativity sometimes. So it feels like we're switching it up a lot, which is cool. I was watching a Saba Kenny Beats cave episode. I don't know if you've heard of The Cave at all with Kenny and Kenny Beats at all, Kyle, but he does these things where he brings in people and, like, you know, they make a beat together and they do stuff. And he was talking to Saba, this great rapper, the Pivot Gang,
and talking about that kind of thing, how like sometimes the creative process, when you get into a place where you're like, you kind of find yourself doing a thing that works, you keep doing it. And that can sometimes, you kind of want to find new ways of doing that.
Absolutely. It's a saying that says, well, I'll tell y'all, like, full disclosure, I was talking to one of my peoples the other day and I said, you know, I feel like lately I've been in this space and place where I'm uncomfortable being comfortable. So meaning like, you feel me? Like, you feel like you have to challenge yourself and you need to do new things. And that's where greatness happens. Like, no one becomes great just being average, right? So it's like we get in our average routine of, okay, this is how I make music. This is how I'm comfortable doing this. But you have to step outside of that. So lately, that's been a thing of mine, like trying new things, doing different things, business ventures, and just mixing it up. That's when great things happen. So I think to your point, Gabe, like you said, it's great to switch it up, not to be so predictable, not to be so mundane. And that's when great things happen. I feel like a lot of the best artists were ones that did things that weren't normal. When I remember listening to College Dropout when I first heard it from Kanye West. And I remember thinking, wow, I was like, this is amazing. I just felt like there was no other artist who was verbalizing what millions of people feel. It's like society sells you a dream, says, hey, go to college, get a good job. You go to college and what happens? You get saddled down with financial debt. So what do you have to do to solidify that debt and get it off of you? You gotta get a job. So you get a job that you hate and you're just working that job to try to pay off these bills. And he really exposed that in a hip hop way. So verbally he was saying, yo, I got this master's degree and I'm making minimum wage, bruh. You know, like just putting it out there for a lot of people who felt that college is going to be the all in all be all to all of your financial woes, you know? So I think it was dope, like him just doing something outside the box. Eminem, when Eminem came out, I was like, this is crazy. I never thought I would love a white guy rapping about doing drugs, but here I am. Right. Yeah. And I'm like talking about killing his baby moms. Right. But he was amazing at it. Right. I'm you know, like he was amazing. I'm like, this guy's wordplay is crazy. Like, you know, the way he put his word, like he was making words rhyme that technically shouldn't even rhyme. But the way he bends the words, it was incredible. So it's like, you know, I say what I have to say is, like you said, it's like everything you want is outside of your comfort zone. Like once you challenge yourself, you challenge your dynamics, everything can happen. So that's a great point, man. What was you going to say, Sam?
Yeah, I feel like in the context of Kanye, like it's interesting because clearly like he was an outsider as a producer before he was a rapper. And I feel like that's no coincidence that he was someone who came in and like kind of challenged the status quo of rap because he was already coming in with an outside perspective or a different perspective in the same way that Eminem was coming in with a different perspective or whatever. So going back to what Gabe said, like it's nice to... It's just huge to find ways to challenge yourself constantly. And I feel like one thing that we've sort of been coming to the realization is just like working with new people and working in person is such a nice way to get that bit of inspiration and challenge yourself because you can see people just do things in a million different ways. And there's so much to learn from other people.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, ad lib on the mic, Kurt. Ad lib on the mic.
Yo, you see me eating the pancakes? I've been eating some pancakes.
So I didn't know what it was, right? I saw it was rather dark. I didn't know. I said, wow, maybe he's eating a burger without the bun. Don't want to judge. Right?
Do what you got to do, man.
It's your preference.
That would be crazy. Hitting the bread is his favorite part.
He's watching his carb intake nowadays.
Hey, we spoke about that during the last session. Bro. Glad to see you following through.
I'm eating chocolate chip pancakes with walnuts. So I took your advice.
At least you got some walnuts in there. Yeah, exactly.
Yo, man. Yo, so another question I wanted to ask y'all, as far as like albums, like individually, like what are some of the albums that you guys like? Like I'll set it off. Like I'll tell y'all, like one album that I love growing up, like he's like just criminally slept on. Like he doesn't get the recognition that he deserves, but this guy's like a phenomenal lyricist. And he just put in that work crazy. I remember growing up and I bought this album called Soul on Ice. And it's by this artist named Raz Kaz out of Cali. But I remember being amazed because I didn't know when I bought the CD that he was from Cali. I just bought it and I was just blown away by the way this guy was rapping. I was like, yo, this dude raps like he's from New York. I'm like, he's not a New Yorker. I'm like, yo, he sounds like he's from Queens, Bronx or Brooklyn. Like this guy had punch after punch after punch. I was like, this guy is amazing. So that was an album that really, really impacted me because I saw how just dope he was and how talented and just his skill set in terms of his intonation, connotation, how he made you feel his words, all of that inflection, like you felt like you were right there for everything. So that was an album for me growing up that was really, really impactful that I really, outside of Tupac, like Tupac was like literally one of the greatest to me personally, like growing up. Like I just felt his music. A lot of people often criticized him because they said they felt he was like bipolar, that he could have these moments where he's saying dear mama and he's talking about hitting them up and all of this violence. But to me personally, I just appreciated that because I said that just shows that he's a real person. Like no one is the same every day, right? If someone's like selling you that they're this motivational guru every day, they're full of crap. You know what I mean? Like you have good days, you have bad days, you have days where you fall back in the cut, you have days where you gotta be a little more assertive, you know? So yeah. I just always, those were like two musicians that really like did it for me. So I'm just interested in knowing individually, like which artists particularly, cause I know what type of music y'all like, but individually, which artists or albums particularly kind of just impacted your whole style?
I mean, in a similar way to Tupac being like, I can do braggadocious stuff and then I can also do introspective stuff. I feel like the person who's carried on that legacy the most is probably Kendrick. So in terms of like a single album, there's a bunch, but one of them, favorite albums of all time, would definitely be Good Kid, Mad City. And that just like completely opened my eyes to like, there's just such a richness in the storytelling and like the lyrics are just so incredibly vivid and that everything is produced so beautiful. I mean, especially the production on that album is just unbelievable. There's such a crazy variety of beats and yet it all sounds so cohesive. It's almost like 10 years. I mean, I could literally gush about this album for hours, but it's almost 10 years old and literally it doesn't sound dated. Parts of it sound a little bit corny, like that Drake verse on Poetic Justice a little bit, like, well, very much.
Dude, Drake's gonna watch this, bro.
Yeah, and I'm not taking, I like the verse.
Dude,
yeah.
He was supposed to come to the studio.
Oh my God, yeah. Shit. We need this scrubbed from the internet immediately. Yeah.
Cancel.
Get our PR team on this immediately.
They're like, sorry, Sam, we're on some legal
stuff. Yeah, exactly. I sincerely regret.
Sorry,
Mr. Orton. Yeah. So, yeah, he took a bribe. He was paid to say that.
Exactly. Yeah, Kanye paid me. It's a diss track. Yeah, exactly. I was put out by Pusha T.
Oh, man. That's funny.
I'll pass the mic on to these guys, though.
Yeah, so for my albums, I would say I just wrote them down, you know. Gotta make sure you get everything organized like that. But Frank Ocean, Channel Orange, that's a big one for me. That I just like kind of a feelsy R&B thing.
Kurt, now break that down for me, and I'm gonna ask you why, because that's an album I never listened to. I saw all the commercial acclaim and all the hype around it, and it was nothing personal against Frank Ocean. It's just he wasn't the artist that made me want to listen to him personally, you know. But yeah, I saw he had a lot of hype, and a lot of time for me, knowing how the industry works, like I'm always like I'm in tune more so to the music as opposed to the hype. So I know that there are these artists where the industry puts millions of dollars in and just keeps their music, keeps their face in front of you until you have no choice but to like it, right? Yeah. So my thing is, I'm just curious to know, you know, what was it about it? Was it the production value? Was it the vocal arrangements? Like, what made it intrigue you in that way?
Yeah, so I mean, honestly, similar things to the other albums that I'll name in a second, but I think I've always been very sort of attracted to like super chill, nostalgic, mellow, feelsy music. You know, I definitely like have room in my heart and love like higher energy things, whether it's like, you know, pop or trap or just like hip hop and a lot of, you know, bravado. Like there's a part of me that loves that stuff too. But generally what I'm most into is like the really mellow, soothing stuff, you know, and Channel Orange captures that perfectly for me. Like Frank Ocean, you know, it's similar to like, you know, some people didn't like Isaiah Rashad's new record because they wanted it to be like more hype, you know, or like I don't know, they missed like when he was doing worse and like his music like had pain in it or had like I don't know, more of an intensity to it. And then with this last record, it was like the beats were pretty chill. Things didn't hit necessarily that hard. He was having a good time. It was like laid back, you know, and that was something that I really liked. So I really liked his new record. And, you know, Frank Ocean kind of similarly, his music was, it was music that like reached that pop stardom, but wasn't, not all the songs you could play on the radio. You know, a lot of those songs are just too slow or they're just too like, songwritery or feelsy or whatever. So that was what it was. And also, I mean, production wise, I'm a huge fan of that album. Just like love the way they did the drums with like a blend of dude, the Lost drums are actually crazy. I mean, it's crazy. It's incredibly good. It hasn't been beat for me.
It hasn't been
beat. Lost is one of the best songs that exists in the entire world, in my personal opinion.
The production on those songs, there's like five elements in each one.
It's so simple. Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was like a nice
production on that. That leads to another question: who did the production on that project?
I think it's this guy Malay.
Malay.
Yeah, he's like splice backs now.
I
think he like engineered and produced a lot of it.
That's so sick. I imagine that Frank Ocean is also pretty involved in his own like production stuff. You know, he's one of those artists that's. Like it's not so divided between like he writes the songs and record the vocals and then the producers do the other stuff. I think he plays a pretty steady hand in the he's on the production credits for the song. Him, Malay, and this guy Omas Keith.
This guy Malay, question, was he like what else has he done before this? Or was this like pretty much like he was one of Frank Ocean's go-to producers, like, and he's like that's like a niche?
I think that was his thing. I could be totally wrong, but I think that this was like his thing, kind of that he...
Gotcha. Those, to me, like, I feel like those are like the dopest combinations, too. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you can always have the Just Blazes, you can have the Kanyes, you can have the Timberlands, you can have the Neptunes, but I feel like there's just something dope about finding a artist-producer relationship that they've cultivated and they have a sound. You know,
yeah, totally.
Like I love to hear all the producers I name, but at the end of the day, it's like sometimes the vibes can get redundant. So, yeah. You know, if Timbaland produces a record for this artist that goes multi-platinum, now the labels all rush to Timbaland. Hey, we need a track just like that. And then you got 10 tracks that sound just like that on the radio. And you're like, I mean, come on, man. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
it's like this, you know,
I definitely agree with you, and the rest of the albums on my list, I think that there is definitely a correlation between like the production for one specific record and like me listening to it a lot. Because the next album on the list is Born Sinner. That's J. Cole. I'm pretty sure Cole has like maybe one, or no, he has a few features on that album, but he does a lot of his own production with other artists too. So like, he was pretty involved with the producers on that record. He probably produced several of the songs. And that kind of falls into a similar camp, you know, like there aren't a lot of songs on Born Sinner that are like, I don't know, they're pretty chill. It's a pretty chill rap record, I think. And then afterward, the next album on my list is Alfredo by Freddie Gibbs. And that entire record was, Freddie Gibbs is probably my favorite rapper right now. And that whole album was produced by Alchemist, you know? So it was literally Freddie and Alchemist. Alchemist did every beat. It's all this whole new kind of, it's kind of a Griselda vibe with like the samples being used as like a collage. And then you have Freddie on the top with like super modern flows and like just really hard bars, like over old delicate soul and jazz samples, which is like, I love that combination. And then after that I have In Real Time by Martin Sky. He's a friend of mine, he's a producer. it's just a beat tape, but I feel like he did just a phenomenal job making it cohesive. You know, the production from the beginning to the end is like...
Yeah, you said Earl Sweatshirt?
No, this is In Real Time by Martin Sky. Martin Sky, yeah. Okay. It's a beat tape. It's a beat tape, but it's one of my favorite albums. And then the last one is this album, Solo Piano by Chilly Gonzalez. Not hip-hop at all, just a solo piano album. But there aren't a ton of records, honestly, that I listen to, like, from start to finish. And... these few, those like five that I named are ones where I think I more often or just as often will like listen to the whole album than just listen to one song from it or something.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. You know, I really, I like those vibes, man. Like I love like, you know, like I said, the chemistry between an artist and producer, like, you know, Freddie Gibbs, I love Freddie Gibbs and Madlib, like just to hear them.
So good, yeah.
It's like, Bandana. This is just dope. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Or like Taking It Back when, you know, old stuff I love, Pete Rock and CL Smooth, like producer, yeah. Artist, yeah, just vibes, like you just felt it. It was like, yeah, this is it. Even Gangstar. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, to have Guru and DJ Premier, you know what I mean? Like just these combinations, man, like they just work. So yeah, man, I definitely get you on that. Definitely get you on that, man.
Yeah, another one that comes to mind is like Reflection Eternal with Talib Kweli and High Take. I mean, that stuff just blows my mind. Like, and people like, I feel like High Tech is like still doing his thing. Like he's killing it. He produced like, on that Anderson .Paak album that came out a couple years ago, Come Down, I think, or something. Like he just did some, on Malibu. So he's like, he's just been around.
I mean, Malibu's gotta be an album on your list, right?
It's definitely on my list. Like I love Anderson .Paak, and that's like also because like it's so it's like probably like What's Going On, that Marvin Gaye record from like 71, Thriller, then like,
What's Going On? Is that the one where it's like his face and then like the forest is behind him? It's like a green cover.
Exactly, yeah. Right. I really liked it because I felt like a lot of Motown up until that point, which I love so much, is so commercial oriented. So it's like singles where they're like, you know, talking about like, we're gonna get the girl that, you know, she may love me, you know, stuff like that. Like, but I felt like this one was like Marvin Gaye talking about like.
Mercy Me.
Right, like the environment, the Vietnam War at the time. Like, it just felt like it was very introspective, and I thought that was beautiful. And then it was over grooves that were just so kind of amazing. And, like, my favorite bass player, James Jamerson, underneath everything, just doing everything. So that JJ. Kind of... JJ, yes. I don't call him that. But Kurt just called him that now.
He calls him that. He calls him JJ.
I call Gabe.
He's J2.
What's up, JJ? And then I feel like more recently, like, I love the Neptunes. I think the Neptunes and Pharrell and Timbaland, like, they started just a whole new thing in the early 2000s. And building off of that, like, kind of that mix of, like, that Virginia Beach sound, but then also the California sound, like, with, like, To Pimp a Butterfly is kind of, like, what means it Kendrick means to me. As opposed to like Good Kid, Mad City, even though I love all of those albums, but I feel like we all connected over those Kendrick albums, even Damn, which I still think is an amazing album. It's just one after another. So that's stuff that I really love, and I really do love listening through to, like, especially I feel like concept albums. Like I really do love like old rock. I love Pink Floyd. I love the Beatles. Like stuff like that. That to me is all. They're all, everything is connected in that way. So I love that as much as I love the singles that came out that kind of make your head knock.
Yeah, nah, I agree 100%, man. I agree 100%, man. Speaking of the producers, just to kind of continue on this vibe, because we spoke about like Timbaland, we spoke about the Neptunes. Those guys were really like part of like, I would say like the golden era. Of music. So you had a transitional period where a lot of producers were making a lot of money and a lot of artists were making a lot of money. And an industry term, a lot of industry friends I had to say, man, yo, they was raping the budgets, right? So you had guys that were getting like, you know, $300,000 for a beat, right? Like just crazy numbers. Then you had Hype Williams charging the label like $1 million for a video. You know what I mean? Like the budgets were crazy back then. So I guess the question I have for you guys is, being producers like in this modern era, how challenging is it to get compensated fairly for what your worth is? And I think that that's a great question, because at the end of the day, given the present state that we're in, where, I mean, and these websites are not new. I mean, you've had BeatStars and all these different websites, but you have a lot of producers that sometimes it seems like they muddy the water a little bit, in my professional opinion, because if they have beats and let's say they're saying, well, hey, man, you know, for five beats, you know, I'll give you a deal, $30 for five beats, download the MP3, and then they're leasing it out to hundreds of artists. And then you come in and you're like, hey, man, I got quality. Here's my price. So have you found it a little challenging in terms of like how musicians value producers? A lot of times, like, it seems like they'll try to get it for the cheap. This is like a street analogy. I could say it's like selling drugs, right? You might have a great product, but then old boy down the block, he got it for the low. So they're like, well, yo, my man down the low, he got it for half price, bro. So, you know, either get down or lay down. And you're like, nah, my price is my price. So how challenging has it been for you guys to really navigate these waters and just establish the brand to make people appreciate the brand and pay the price?
I feel like it's definitely new for all of us, and I'll pass the mic really soon. I think that, I mean, we've definitely been spoiled by you in the way that you do splits. And I think that it's been a mix. I think there has been a lot of generosity too with other producers and artists. Like, we've been really kind of, people have been pretty fair to us so far. I think if you kind of just lend a hand and you're kind and people are kind back to you, like, that just does seem to be true. I think that that's something that we've learned a lot from you, is kind of that positivity and generosity really helps you out. But it's a challenge. It's hard to get paid. It's really hard to get paid.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the internet is so weirdly good and bad for music. Like, on the one hand, it is actually amazing that you have such low barriers to entry. And I think it's allowed a lot of interesting sounds to kind of like flourish and emerge out of the internet and, you know, giving voice to people who might not have had it otherwise. On the other hand, it also does, as you said, kind of like muddy the water sort of. I don't want to, you know, knock at other people's hustle at all, but there's a lot of stuff out there that, I'm not going to speak to the quality, but at least is like not unique necessarily. Like, so yeah, it's weird. It's like we can make a beat and want someone to pay something for it, but they could just find a type beat or whatever on YouTube. You know what I mean? So it's strange. It's like the whole type beat phenomenon is so interesting too. So it's like, it's weird. The internet has let like these unique genres emerge and also leads things becoming so standardized, you know, and like makes, I don't know, just like, it's crazy. Yeah. You could go on YouTube and look up Pierre Bourne type beats. There should be 1,000 beats that sound the same, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the point. So it's not even knocking it, I guess. That's the point. What were you about to say again?
Just that, and we're not really like, we're hoping to do it in kind of an old fashioned way. Like, we're not on TikTok. We don't really do videos of ourselves making beats. Like, that's not the way that we kind of want to build our brand. And I think that's another thing, is that we really want to find our way in the industry with quality beats. And we don't necessarily have any interest, I don't think, in kind of having like almost a reality TV show way of doing it, where you get a lot of followers and you try to have a huge Instagram presence and all this stuff. Like, that's not our thing. It's like just trying to find a way to get connected to people that we really like and want to make music with, and continue to try to do that, which is, I think, like, I can't tell if it's harder or it definitely has its benefits in the sense of us not, you know, spending a long time trying to make the right videos and having the appearances, but at the same time, like, in trying to get our beats heard, like, what, you know, differentiates us between another person on the internet reaching out to someone over DM, you know?
Absolutely. And in a gem for all the listeners out there, OG told me this a long time ago. He said, Sparks, you don't need a lot of connections. You just need the right connections. Right. So that's to say, it's like, and no shade to like producers out there that's doing their thing. Get your money how you get it, you know, get it how you live. It's all good. But at the end of the day, just realize that sometimes you can actually tarnish your brand by overexposing yourself. So if you're selling beats for $15 to 500 artists, but realistically, these artists are not going anywhere. They don't have a following. The only person buying their music is their grandmother and their aunt that go to church, right? And then they're trying to get the church to buy it, right? Like, I mean, let's call a spade, right? But if you
exactly
market, let's say 10 beats that you have to 10 quality artists that have followings and they're getting it out there and you're getting exposure, those 10 mean way more than those 500. You know what I'm saying? Like seriously. So I think when people talk about branding, they talk about marketing, they talk about content, they talk about strategy. You have to be thought out, you have to be calculated, you have to be intelligent, and you have to be strategic. Like all of those components play a role in success. Like success is not happenstance. And what happens is a lot of people feel that way. Like they feel like they're just gonna roll the dice and they're gonna get lucky. And no, it's like someone once said, you know, yeah, overnight success. Yeah, I'm like a 20 year in the making overnight success. That's exactly. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like there's no such thing. It's like it's work, it's integrity, it's like it's the repetition of doing the same thing over and over again. Like persistence wears down resistance, constantly doing it like over and over, you know. Yep. So yeah, that's facts, man.
Yeah. So and in doing that, trying to, you know, stay with the things that we initially did, even though, like, you know, our brand is solid, but we have no money. So in making no money, like, you want to make money. So like finding ways of either trying to do that or not, you know, compromising and saying, all right, we're just going to stick with this a little bit longer and trust our gut that this is going to work out for us in the way that we want it to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Having that plan. I think that's important. Like having a plan, and not just any plan, but a realistic plan. And then how to execute that plan. Cause a lot of people will be like, yo, I wanna be a millionaire. And it's like, oh, that's cool, but how are you gonna get the bag, right? Like, what's your plan, man? You know, like you need that. Like you gotta have strategy and know how to execute. So yeah, that's a good point there, man. I got some questions that I just throw out there, random fillers for guests on the show. So random question for you guys. You can only pick one, Pac or Biggie. Each of y'all, I want to hear.
I'm going to go ahead and say Biggie for this one.
Biggie, I think.
I think I'm Pac.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Nasty Nas or Jay-Z?
Nas.
Jay-Z.
Nas.
I think Nas. Nas.
Nas is the one Hove. Kurt, why'd you pick Hove over Nas? I'm just interested to know. Now are your parameters, and this is a question, are your parameters based upon lyricism, or are you approaching your preference based upon a holistic approach? So meaning not just lyric.
Holistic entirely.
Business success, everything. Like that's what you're looking at.
I mean, I, honestly, as a rapper, Nas, but as a figure, as an artist, Hove for sure. I mean, and production, like 444 for me, like No ID, it doesn't get much better production wise. And then also, you know, Hove is a businessman, man. I feel like he taught me and a lot of other people like how to deal with money. You know what I mean? Like that, like, he's on a different level for me. And no shade to Nas, of course.
Right. Got you. Copy. Okay, Foxy Brown or Lil' Kim?
Lil' Kim.
Oh, this one got y'all.
I would say
I think Lil' Kim. I don't know Foxy Brown that well, honestly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All right. So, another dope record. Just so y'all know, whenever y'all got time, you just want to throw it on. Broken Silence by Foxy Brown.
Can you answer those questions for us as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah, what you got?
Absolutely.
So important.
Right. So for me personally, which is crazy, growing up in Queens in New York City, everybody was riding for Biggie. I didn't become a Biggie fan until later in life. I was always a Tupac fan. So even though like he was riding around with the bandanas on, they had Death Row East and they screaming out, you know, West Coast and all that. Yo, I was like, yo, man, I like this music.
I'm with you.
I was a Tupac fan, but later on in life, I began to appreciate Biggie's music. You know what it was? Just for me personally, I felt Biggie was a better commercial artist than Tupac. Even though Tupac has some big records, because Biggie had Diddy backing him, Diddy had the ear for the production to say, yo, you gritty, you rapping, you nice, but we still got to sell this at the end of the day. right? So we got, your lyrics are underground rapper, but I'm gonna give you some mainstream production so we can sell these records. You know what I'm saying? So that was like, cool, you know? Like, I mean, he made him go, you know what I mean? Like, and I like those records too, but you know, I like Pop because like, he had a lot of stuff that was just more emotionally charged. So for me personally, like, I just like to feel the emotion and the conviction in his music. Like, that's just me. You know, I'm a lyricist and I'm big on feeling the music. Like, you can make commercial records and that's dope, but if I don't feel it, if I'm just dancing to it and that's all it is, to me, it's kind of like candy. Like, it feels good for the moment, but after I come off that sugar high, it really has no substance. It's not going to hold me. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of looked at like Tupac, like soul food. It was like, yo, I feel this. Like, I feel this. I can relate to this, you know? So, and not to take anything away from Biggie, phenomenal artist, man. You know what I mean? But that's just me with that. Nas and Jay-Z, I agree with all of y'all. I feel like I like Nas, not only because he was from Queens, but I felt that he won the battle. You know, I felt that Ether was just an atom bomb that just kind of just disseminated everything. But if you're looking at it from a holistic business approach, nobody can touch Jay-Z. I mean, he mastered the game. Like, this guy, I mean, to come from Marcy Projects, selling drugs, be able to transition into music, be able to transition into a successful artist, then transition into a record label executive and have all these different brands. I mean, that's genius. But that's a hustler too at the end of the day. Like, a hustler is going to get to the bag. Like, he's not just going to be limited and stifled by music. He's going to do everything. You know, he's going to do champagne. He's going to do clothing. He's going to have 40-40. This is just a hustler. Like,
he's going to marry Beyonce too.
Hey, got to the bag. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get to the bag in any way. Right. Like, you know, he's a smart guy, man. Smart guy.
I've got a follow up question for you, Kyle. Do you think Jay-Z has a single album that is, as an album, better than Illmatic?
I would have to say, me personally, no. I feel the only thing that could come closest to Illmatic would be The Blueprint, the closest. And even that's a stretch. You know why? Because people have to look at the time frame that Nas made Illmatic. The age that he was when he made that album, he was so young, but yet he was so lyrical, so intelligent, so astute. The production was phenomenal. You had Pete Rock, all these different elements going on here. Like, for his age and for the way that album came out, you know, to try to compare Blueprint to that, because, and the reason I say Blueprint is because I feel like Blueprint was one of Jay-Z's most soulful albums, you know what I mean? So, I mean, but that was late in his career. So, I mean, a young Nas making a classic compared to an older Jay-Z, I mean, Nas kind of had to level up, you know? And then if you compare both debut albums, Illmatic to Reasonable Doubt was cool, but Illmatic was classic.
Like, yeah, I feel like that's basically a perfect album. Like, I feel like there's not one word or beat.
Yeah, it was just like, wow, this guy, like, he's just rapping. You know what I mean? Like, he's rapping. Like, this guy was like, you know, I felt that's what it was, man. For me, Foxy Brown or Lil' Kim, to be perfectly honest with y'all, I kind of feel like, I think Lil' Kim edges out Foxy only because I feel Kim had more of a machine behind her. So we got to know her better. She had way more collabs with notable artists. Foxy, she was dope. Like I said, for anybody listening, even you guys, when you get a chance, listen to Broken Silence. Because on that record, she's like rapping. Like, I remember getting that album when it came out years ago. And I was like, yo, Foxy Brown got bars. Like, she was rapping, you know? So, I feel Kim edged her out. Let me see, what else did I have to ask you guys? Oh, Nicki Minaj or Remy Ma?
I kind of want to say Nicki Minaj. I think Nicki Minaj she's like, especially for our generation, I think, is like kind of just like a true icon, to be honest.
Totally. Nicki Minaj can't be stopped, man.
Without her, there would be no Doja Cat. There'd be no Cardi B.
She paved the way for a lot of artists. Yeah, I think you're totally right.
Right, definitely, definitely.
Helped too.
Yeah. All right, I got two more for y'all, man. Two more for y'all. Then we gonna move on. All right. We gonna take it to the Black Shades. Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles?
Oh, come on, Stevie. Oh my God.
Stevie, man.
I just listen to Stevie more. I mean, yeah. Like, I just listen to him so much more.
I think Stevie. This one's really giving Gabe a lot of trouble, but I would probably say Stevie as well. I mean, obviously Stevie wouldn't exist without Ray Charles, but something about Stevie Wonder's music is so contemporary. You can hear it so clearly. Like in something like Channel Orange. Mm-hmm. Like Channel Orange is just like a 70s soul album, just like deconstructed. You know what I mean?
I have to check out that album, man, today. I'm gonna listen to it.
Yeah. We'll listen to Broken Silence and
man.
Fire.
What do you think, Gabe?
I think you convinced me. I think that when I listen to like the old Ray Charles records, there's something there that is like the gospel part of it that I just think is so unbelievable and so special. And I just think he's such, it's so hard to decide, but I think ultimately like Stevie is like, I don't know if it like gets better than Stevie in terms of like a writer. I mean, he played all of those instruments, you know, on like so many of his records, like Living in the City. You know, it's just like that's all him on the drums and everything, like Superstition, like even the ones that are like hits, like the fact that he made that whole pocket himself is like that blows my mind.
Yeah, I don't know how he did it. Genuinely have no idea.
Fire, man. And I'll tell y'all something too. The dope thing for listeners out there that don't know this, which should be common knowledge at this point in time, but Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles, and this is amazing. Even though these guys cannot see visually, they had the foresight and the vision to see that they needed to own their masters. So Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder own the rights to their masters. Wow. And I feel that that's important for a lot of musicians. Like, you know, we understand the game. A lot of times you have to play the game to a certain extent. So depending upon what's being presented to you, sometimes the labels, they'll say, hey, listen, man, you ain't getting nothing. You know, or you're getting a little bit of nothing. Practically, you might as well have nothing anyway, right? They'd be like, yo, we just want to give you this to shut you up or appease you. So you realize like ownership is key. Like, and I want to emphasize that because this podcast is about empowerment. It's about business. It's about entrepreneurship. It's about ownership. And just strongly encouraging everybody to boss up in any way that you can. And to understand that everything is negotiable. Everything is negotiable. Like, I got to emphasize that because the reality is I've had plenty of record deals. In the beginning, I had crappy deals. Then as time progressed, I was able to negotiate some phenomenal deals. So the reality is that don't undervalue yourself. And I think that's what a lot of predators, for lack of a better word, in the industry do, whether it's labels, whether it's managers, they're very predatory on musicians. So they prey on your passion. They prey on your hunger.
Your success,
right? They feel like they have you, right? They have you, like, you know, like you. They try to almost make you feel as if you should be happy to be here, right? Like you should be fortunate enough to be here, right? And like, you know, just play ball, right? But no, what you got to realize is that you got to know your worth and add tax. Do what you got to do at the end of the day, right? Because you know who you are. You know what you bring to the table. You know, it's like somebody once said, yo, I got $1 million in my mind. I just got to get it out. Right. Like, you know, it's there. You know, you got the potential. It's like you just have to make sure that you set yourself up, because that's what it is. Like for musicians, everything is about equity and having skin in the game, because one day you're going to be old. So you have to make sure that you lay those foundations and plant those seeds that'll give you monetary returns for years to come. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the name of the game, man. Try to, if you can't own completely, try to get as much ownership as you can, you know, retaining publishing, doing all these things, man, to make sure you're set up the right way, you know?
Like that record deal might look good now, but if you turn into Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles, you're going to want those masters for sure. Yep. Man. Exactly. Generations of wealth for your family.
Generational wealth. That's what it is. Planting the seeds. Seeds that have generational wealth. So definitely, man. One thing this was the last question. Like this, I had to ask you guys, Drake or Kendrick Lamar? And
Kendrick.
But wait, before you answer that question though, right? So just think of it from a holistic approach, not just lyricism, right? But think of, I want you guys to answer this question from the point of everything, lyricism, cultural impact. Who do you think's got it?
Well, Kyle, you know what I'm going to say before I, but in all seriousness, I really like I love Drake. I mean, Kendrick as an artist is like incomparable, but there is something about Drake that he's an icon in a way that Kendrick isn't. And like, he is such a easily recognizable character. Like, he leans into the memes made about him. Like, he knows he's kind of funny and a weird dude. And like, I just kind of like admire that a little bit. And it's like made him the like biggest, one of the biggest stars of our generation. So musically, it's definitely Kendrick, but I can appreciate Drake's role.
Yeah. I mean, I think also the way that Kendrick kind of like goes away for a while, like he's not, I was watching an interview with Drake where he was kind of like, I'm the only one of, like, because he was talking about how it's like the big three is like Cole, Kendrick, and Drake over the last like decade, and he was like, I'm the only one who's still like really doing the hip-hop thing, where he like, you know, yeah, he lives alone in a crazy mansion and he's like still, you know, doing the single life or whatever. And I am just more inclined to like the fact that he was like, and Kendrick, you know, he is, you know, I think he's been like, is he engaged to like his high school sweetheart? Like, he's been, you know, very much a quiet kind of person behind the scenes, and he takes pride in that. And that's something that I value, I think. But he does his art, he does the thing that really matters to him, and then he kind of says, now I'm going to be a person. You know, I feel like you kind of have to be a person to really do the best thing, you know, make the best stuff that you can.
That's such a good point, though, because so many big pop stars like Adele makes a legendary album and then just goes away. Kendrick makes three legendary albums in between, goes away, disappears. Drake just never goes away. He's like always, Drake is always there. Yeah.
Which is amazing. And like, I have 30 Drake songs that I like, you know, and they're all singles.
Yeah.
And at the same time, like, there's, you know, some of them sound very similar to each other, and that's totally fine. That's what happens. But there's just something about it. It feels like every single song that Kendrick puts out is like incredibly different and like meaningful in its own way.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, you know, like me personally, I love them both for the same reasons you guys specified. Like, every like Kendrick just to me has a lot of depth, but Drake does also too, you know what I'm saying? Oh, you got a visitor. Who is this? Another member of Silk Beats?
This is the phenomenal artist Stocking Gia.
Hey,
what's
up?
Going on, Stocking Gia? How are you?
Hey, it's awesome. Good.
Awesome.
Great. Cool.
Awesome, and man,
this is,
cool.
This is Kyle.
Hey, nice to meet you.
We work with
what's
Kyle.
Going on? All right. Yeah, so I was just piggybacking off of what you guys said, and essentially that I like both of them for the same reasons that you guys detail, right? Like, Drake is, he's a mega star, just killing it. Like, his personality is out of this world. He makes mega hits. Kendrick is very more intricate, you know. I mean, if I had to liken it to something in some regard, you know, I would say it's kind of like if we're talking about Biggie and Tupac, right? It's like Kendrick would be the Tupac, like very more so deep, right? There's soul food there that you feel musically. And then Drake is more like Biggie, right? Like, he can rap and he's like commercially big, you know? So I think I get it for both, man. So I got, we're coming in on the tail end, brothers. I just got two more questions for y'all, man. So I ask everybody the same question on the podcast, and the question is straightforward, and it is, what is your mantra for each of you? Now, my mantra personally is persistence wears down resistance. So I'm big on, no matter what challenges you may face, whatever obstacles that you're able to buckle down, just reassess, reevaluate, and come back even stronger to conquer that challenge. So for each of you guys, what's your mantra and why?
It's on the tip of my tongue. Hold on. It's taking me a second. This is it's not like it's something.
Wait, just to make you laugh, Sam. One person told me, said, "Oh, my mantra is love that chicken from Popeye." I said, "Wow." I said, "You need a new mantra, bro."
I was told a good piece of advice like a couple of years ago, right when I was kind of starting to think about doing music like seriously as a career, and the advice was, be better and be different. And I hadn't thought, it seems so obvious, but I hadn't thought about the two of them like in tandem, and that both are necessary. And, you know, it's just something to aspire to. I think that's like the goal that I always have, is like, not only do you have to be better, but it has to be better in its own way, you know?
Totally. I would say for me, it's just do what you want. Like, do what you want. No other... Everything else is a waste of your energy, and it's not going to churn out anything better than if you just were doing what you wanted to do. So.
The pancake.
Yeah, exactly. You can tell I live by that motto.
I know.
My mantra, it used to be like, take how hard you're working, double it, triple it, and then work harder. But I don't actually believe that anymore because we've been talking about work smart. And I feel like because working hard doesn't necessarily...
Work hard is like Silk's motto.
That's kind of the Silk motto that hasn't been mentioned. It's like, you know, be efficient. Like, do the amount of work that's going to bring you farther in the direction that you want to go. But you don't have to, like, you know, grind on the stuff, you know. It's like, don't sweat the small stuff kind of thing, you know.
Awesome. Keep it simple, stupid.
Oh my God,
that's
it.
What it is. That's what it is.
It's KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. That's the main. It's work smart and KISS.
Yeah.
Work smart and KISS.
That's dope. That's dope, man. That's dope. Another one I have is collaboration is greater than competition. So being able to build those viable relationships. Nice. So the last thing I have for you guys is a.
Does she? Do you have a? What's your
name? I know, this is stressing me out because I was thinking about it myself. Like, oh my God, what would I say? I don't know. But I mean, I don't know if I have like a motto. I don't know.
You heard it here first.
God. I'm not prepared for this.
Well, when you do, you can let us know, right?
I was
let us know. Dope. So listen, fellas, the last question I have for you guys is, what is on the rise for you guys individually? What's on the rise for Silk Beats? Like, what should the listeners be checking for? Like, you know, any type of projects you guys got coming out? You know, let the people know.
We just got a feature back from a special artist who we've been a fan of for a bit, and it's a, you know, it's on a beat that we all worked on, and that's definitely something that's been exciting recently. Can't tell you who it is. We'll tell you privately, but we won't be sharing with the public. But other than that, I mean, just a lot of time in the studio, a lot of working on a lot of different things, and
I feel like we'll have a lot of stuff coming out. I mean, it's like, as producers, it's kind of hard to anticipate artists' release schedules, but I think that it's lining up, so we'll get a lot of stuff coming out that we're kind of excited about, like, kind of coming out in the spring.
Yeah.
Just with like a number of artists that we've worked with either just digitally or in person that we're pretty passionate about.
Yeah.
I want to give a special and shout out to Ahmad Anonymous in Atlanta. Yeah. That's someone that came up into our studio, and that the Atlanta scene, like Chris Patrick, Ahmad Anonymous, those guys are just doing an amazing job down there, and we're hoping to work with them even more.
I agree.
Dope. Fire. Well, look, this has been super dope. We got a lot of listeners, so this is great. Definitely dope, man. So happy to have y'all, man, and looking forward to hearing more stuff coming soon from you guys. All right?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
Look, anytime, man. Listen, once again, this is Kyle Hunter on the Diagnosis Success Podcast. Appreciate y'all listening as always. Stay motivated, stay inspired.
Yeah, let's go, man.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was so fun. I can't wait till you come back to the studio and we'll cut another 7 songs.
When it's so much that it seems wrong, never gonna lose, that's my theme song. I just security change on. Back to reality, ain't no one bad as me. See, they be doubting, but I keep on actually pushing. Not giving up, that's how I give it up. Pushing, not giving up, that's how I give it up. That's how I give it up.